Chapter 2. More recently than in Spencer's day, the sweet Thames ran softly through green banks whereon the violet pallid grew. The little daisy that at evening closes, the virgin lily and the primrose true. I have spoken with Londoners who could still remember summer trips to the pastoral beauties of Greenwich as delights of their childhood. But long before the time of which I write, the trees on the Isle of Dogs had given way to ugly factories belching black smoke into the filthy cloud that hung over London like a funeral pall. The river, lined with mean houses and coaling docks and warehouses, flowed sullen and slow, befouled by unspeakable and unthinkable refuse. Standing on the deck, as our steamer headed for the Royal Albert Dock, I observed it was raining. It always seemed to rain the day we returned to England. Yet though I thought with fond nostalgia of the hot blue skies of Egypt, I could not help but be stimulated by my proximity to the greatest of cities, centre of empire, home of intellectual and artistic prowess, land of the free, and home of true British grit. I remarked as much to Emerson. "My dear Emerson, there is something stimulating about returning to the centre of empire, the home of intellectual and artistic..." "Don't talk such bloody... blooming nonsense, Amelia," Emerson growled, applying his handkerchief to my cheek and displaying a grimy smudge. "The very air is black." Ramsay stood between us. I held him by one arm, Emerson by the other. And, of course, he had to add his opinion. "Anatomical studies on the cadavers of Londoners prove that prolonged breathing of this atmosphere turns the lungs quite black. However, I believe Mama was not referring to the physical environment, but to the intellectual..." "Be still, Ramses," I said automatically.
"I am quite aware of what your Mama meant," Emerson said, scowling. "What are you up to, Amelia? I will probably be obliged to spend more time than I would like in this filthy town if I am to finish..."